Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Mosermouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. This week we are joined by a former Formula One racer and current WEC driver. He's raced alongside Lewis Hamilton, Nico Hülkenberg, my beloved Paul de Resta and more to name a few. All the way from Holland, the king of banter himself, Guido van der Garde, joins us this week on the show to discuss F1 being back on our screens, as well as the ups and downs of his own racing career. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger, and enjoy.
Welcome to episode 32 of the Motormouth podcast. And before we introduce today's guest, I need to head to Essex, where I find my co-host in the English county that's home to Borley Rectory, England's most haunted house, with reports of floating nuns and headless figures for over 200 years. And while we're on the subject of things that are old, Essex also has a remarkable 14,000 listed buildings, with 1,000 of them grade 1 or 2. However, that is not what's important today in Essex, my friends. Today, Essex is important as it's home to the extraordinary, the exceptional, the elongated Harry Benjamin. How are you?
Wow, thank you, Tim. Always a pleasure with your introductions. I think I'm very good. I think that haunted house might actually be near where I live, because there is a house opposite where I live which was used in a horror film once.
So really?
That was it. Yeah. But yeah, I'm all good. Just like F1's back, excited. Yes. Sort of things are getting kind of back to, I mean, it's not normal, but it's some sort of normal. It's just good to be sort of back and seeing actual race cars live on a track. That was cool. So yeah. Buzzing from that. And it was a great race as well.
Amazing race.
But no, apart from that, just ticking over. You've got the good news. You've had the baby, haven't you?
Had the baby. Yeah. She's now a week old.
When are you getting it into a car?
As soon as humanly possible. Although she's actually already been in a car a few times, to be fair. And we're going away to Kent, the Kent coast, tomorrow for a few days. Nice. So a little holiday. But she's great. She sleeps through the night. She just sleeps, she poos, she sleeps some more. It's a breeze. So far so good. And our other two boys don't sleep, so this is a very nice change. So she chilled with me and watched the F1 from Austria, which was nice. I had a beer on the go with her, you know, parked next to me watching Lando do his thing. So yeah,
perfect.
It's good. Now listen, shall I introduce today's guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
So today we are joined by Guido van der Garde, a man who you'll know from Formula One and the World Endurance Championship. He hails from Holland and found himself on a fast track to racing stardom after starting his career in karts before progressing through Formula Renault, Formula 3, what was GP2, before moving up to the pinnacle of racing in Formula One. Since then, he's a regular in the World Endurance Championship, and did you know he's also a savvy businessman and runs his own real estate company. It's a joy to have him here. Guido, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you very much, guys. Nice introduction.
How are you getting on, Guido? How is you're in Holland at the moment, aren't you? So how's lockdown been and this sort of elongated off-season been for you?
Well, to be honest, quite good. I mean, lockdown, of course, we had some stuff that everything was closed and we couldn't do nothing for some couple of months. But to be honest, the last few weeks, actually month, has been quite good. Everything has been open. Restaurants start to get open again. Even the clubs, you can come in, have a drink, and have to sit on a chair, but at least you can come in.
Yeah,
and it looks like life is getting started again. So that's pretty good.
It's been it's been really odd here. We've only just sort of started relaxing our lockdown, and as you probably saw in the news, parts of London last night and over the weekend were complete chaos. So it's an interesting time.
I can imagine, you know, because after so many months, how long it's been? It's like 4 or 5 months doing nothing.
Yeah,
everybody's bored. Everybody wants to do something. Everybody wants to get started again with the life. And enjoy, and I can understand, and of course, but on the other hand, you know, everybody needs to be a little bit careful and stick to the rules, but at least you need to have a bit of fun as well.
Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. I think that's very well said. Well, let's switch up and talk about you and your racing career. Let's start off with sort of taking us back to the start, really, and how it all began. Do you remember that first time you got into a kart and how it all came about?
Yeah, of course. It's been a little while, but to be honest, I still remember the day was yesterday. But it was a cool time. I mean, my father used to be a race driver when he was younger, but of course he had no money. He had to stop and had to start his own business. When I was young, we were always watching Formula One races, and we were very enthusiastic about it. And yeah, once I got 9 years old, he said, well, you want to do some go-kart? And I said, yeah, why not? Let's give it a try. So we did a couple of runs. And then later on, 2 months, 3 months later, he bought me a go-kart. And from there, we started. And yeah, it was a pleasure. It was good fun. We were starting to drive every two times a week, on Wednesday and on the weekend. From there on, once it started to go well, we started to go racing, get more experience with that. 2 years later, I won the Dutch championship. So we saw straight away that there was a bit of talent and that I really enjoyed it. So I mean, it was good fun, to be honest.
Do you remember when it became more than just good fun and you thought, this is something I can do as a career?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you are 12, 13, 14, 15, it's just fun, and of course you enjoy it. You go over all of Europe. When you were 16, you started to go even worldwide. We went to Canada. We went to race in Japan. So we started to get already quite serious. But to be honest, when I started to become a world champion in 2002, and it was the highest level in go-kart, we were racing with big guys who later on won a couple of world championships as well in Formula One. And from there on, I said, look, my goal is to reach Formula One and let's go for it. And it took a while, but on the end, I reached my goal. And that was, the most important thing.
And obviously F1, as you say, was the goal. In 2006, you joined the McLaren Young Driver Program. How much of a milestone was that, and how did it help you in your career?
It was amazing to be one of the McLaren young guns guys, and you know, Lewis was there. They have been working with him for a while now. They got him into Formula One as well quite soon. But the program was very good. They were one of the first who started programming with the simulators. So we did a little work with there. We did quite a bit of training there. I started to live in England as well, in Weybridge.
Nice.
It was quite a cool place to live. And it was, for me, the next step that I could move on. Because before that, we were always looking for what to do. Because the thing is, in go-kart, you can run more or less, every day. Well, when I was living in Italy, it was like maybe 3 to 4 times a week, which is quite a lot. But once you go from go-kart to racing, that's the most important, the most difficult thing is that you're not able to drive every week, but you're able to only drive every 2 weeks, and then you only have a race. Mm. So next to that, you need to adapt your life. You need to start training in the gym. You need to do some other exercise than racing. And that took a little while for me to understand the whole thing to work on yourself next to the races. And I think McLaren helped me a lot to find a good structure in life. And yeah, that was a good experience.
And did that lead to you? Did you get a chance to test the F1 car? What was that first bit of F1 machinery that you were able to get in and feel that pure performance?
No, it was for McLaren. It was mainly to do a lot of simulator work. On the end, we were not able to do a Formula One test, unfortunately. I wish to have been doing that, but yeah, things it was a bit later. I think in 2008, I had my first experience in Formula One. Because we won the World Championship, the 3.5 World Series Championship mm-hmm. from Renault. It was an amazing year. I won six races that year. I was already, before the last race, I was already champion. And because you win the championship, you got a test in Barcelona with the Formula One team of Renault. And yeah, that was an amazing experience, although it was a bit tough because... that year they had like Piquet and Alonso in the car.
Ah.
And they built the car around them. And those guys are fairly small. And I'm quite tall. So I didn't really fit in the car. So every time when you were braking, your knees start to hit the monocoque. And yeah, it was quite painful. But on the end, when you're driving and the other lean, it's helping a lot.
Can you talk us through what it felt like that first time you got inside a Formula One car and that sort of visceral, raw experience? And was it just unlike anything you've ever driven before?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you exit the pit lane, you press the pit limiter button, and you hit the throttle, and you suddenly feel whoop, all the G-force in your neck, and it's like, holy shit, what is this? You know, it's just. It's amazing. It's not, but after that, it's not only the power that you feel that's amazing, but also the corner speed. And the most difficult thing was to judge the first few laps where the corners are. And what I mean with that is, like, you know, I've been racing all these series before without power steering, and Formula One has power steering, so the reaction time is much quicker than you're used to the other series. So every time you brake, you start to brake late and you start to turn in. But every time you turn in too early because of the power steering, you know. So it was quite a difficult first few laps. But once you get used to it, it's all nice. I mean, the corner speed, the high speed corners was just amazing.
And people talk about the braking, don't they? They always say one of the most incredible things about a Formula One car is the way it brakes. I guess that also was something you had to get used to.
Yeah, it was, of course. Yeah, it breaks. You arrive much faster and you stop much quicker. But for me, the most impressive thing was the high speed corners, the way you could go through them, the way and how fast. It was just, you know, another step that I was not used to, and it took a while. But after that, I think after the day, I was quite happy with the first run I did. And it was a good experience. And in the end, the times were not so bad. So it was good fun.
Was there any hope at that time that, you know, a Formula One race seat might not be too far away? Because obviously 2013, that is when you get your first full-time race seat. What was happening in those years between, obviously you then progressed up to Formula Two, what was then GP2. Talk us through those years and sort of balancing that and also knocking at the door of Formula One, having had that F1 test.
I mean, to be honest, I was very close to a seat with Braun GP for the year after, because you know the team was for sale, and my backers, my sponsors, they were in talk with Ross Braun to do the team together, and they said, look, if we do that, we will help you, but we need to put one Dutch driver in next to Jensen. And in the end, it didn't work out. It was a big disappointment, because I think, you know, to join that team that year would have been great for my career, to be honest. It was like it was. And I had to do a couple of years in GP2. Now it's called F2. more than I wanted, because every time I had a great season, especially in the third year, I did. I was supposed to either win or be second in the championship, and then the last race all went to shit, to be honest. And I finished fourth in the championship. And the year after, I decided to quit F2 and to focus on Formula One. I got a contract with Caterham to be as a reserve and third driver. But on that year, they struggled to find a top driver in their GP2 team. So they decided to put me in. So I had to do another year there, and the team was still building up. So it was tough on the beginning. I mean, we were struggling a lot on the beginning of the year, but after a while we got a decent setup. We won a couple of races. And then towards the end of the year, I got let's say 5 to 6 times a possibility to drive on the FP1 on the Formula One tracks. So pre-practice one. And I did very, very well. The team was very, very happy and pleased. The progression I made during the season, the things I did with the GP2 team. So then I deserved the seat in 2013, and then my dream came true, let's say.
Yeah. And how was your mindset at this stage? Obviously, you've had the knockback with Braun. Fine, get over that. You make it to Formula One. You get your full-time race seat. It's not the quickest car in the world. It's not the quickest car on the grid, that's for sure. Yeah. How did that affect you? Was it frustrating, or were you buying into the bigger picture and thinking, we're just building something here, let's just see what happens? How are you dealing with that?
It's a good question. It was tough the first 4 to 5 races. The results went a lot up and down. Of course, I had a teammate who I knew from the past, because he was also my teammate in GP2. And he had already 1 year experience in Formula One. And sometimes he did a much better job than I did. Sometimes I did a better job than he did. But he was more consistent during the first few races. And I was very frustrated after 4 or 5 races that after 20 or 30 laps, you got passed by Sebastian Vettel with a blue flag. Yeah. and a few years before, we were still teammates in Formula 3. And we were very close to each other by lap times, and suddenly this guy was now 3.5 seconds quicker than me always. So it took me a while, but then I said to myself, look, the only thing what I can do is to beat my teammate. My teammate has the same car, he has the same equipment, so let's get on with it and fight as much as possible. And it started to get better, it started to be more consistent, and the second part of I call it the season, was very, very good for me. I beat it Charles Peak quite a lot, and I think I did a very good job, and I was happy with the end of the season. So it was nice, but of course I wanted more. You know, I've been racing with all those guys from the past, with Lewis, with Nico, with Sebastian, and with a lot of those guys in go-kart. We started when we were 13. We know each other from there on, and you know, if they are in the front and they can win championship, I'm also able to at least with a good car to finish in the top 10 or top 5. So I decided the year after to go to Sauber to be there the third and reserve driver with an option to have a race seat in 2015. And of course, it was a step back from a race team seat to suddenly to be a test driver again. But I knew that if I do a good job there, and the team will like me and the way I work, I'm sure that I will have a big chance to race again in 2015. And it nearly happened, but it went all to shit, to be honest. But the thing that I wanted the most is just to show myself that I'm able to reach a point, to show myself that I'm quick enough and not only drive in the back.
Absolutely.
You look back at the sort of the end of your F1 career, obviously not the way anyone wants a career. You don't want your career to end in the first place. But obviously yours was very publicized as well. You know, across all the tabloids, more so than any other F1 driver might experience. Obviously, you probably would have liked to stay in F1 longer, but do you regret anything that happened in your F1 career? Or are you happy with sort of, you did the best you could with what you had?
No, I think I did the best I could what I had. I wanted to race. I wanted to show myself how good I am, and to measure myself with the best in front of the form, yeah, in front of all the crowds. I got a shot with Sauber. I signed a contract there, and then they decided to put two other drivers in with more money, because the team was struggling money wise, and for me, that was a very big disappointment. So I decided to go with my backers and sponsors. Like, look, guys, I have a contract. I signed a contract much earlier, and I wanted to race. So we had to go, all the way. That was the only thing to at least reach to reach something, because I was all the time in my head. I was super fit. I was willing to give everything that season, but. And in the end, it turned out that I had no contract, or let's say no seat that season. They bought off my contract, and I was sitting home in 2015. And that was, to be honest, a very, very tough period, because suddenly you had to see all the races from home. You had nothing to do. You had no goal, no racing anymore. So. That was a very tough period in my life, on the other hand, it's still a pity that I couldn't show myself in a decent car that year. The Sauber, on the beginning of the year, they had a quite good car, so it was a pity, to be honest. But we won all the court cases, we won all the cases, but on the end, I had no race seat, and it was like this.
It's obviously a low point for you personally, having to drag things through courts, but mainly not driving for that year. However, it did all change, and 2016, you're back racing. How did the World Endurance Championship come about?
Good. It was, I was in doubting to the end of 2015 what to do, because I was without racing nearly 1 year. Of course, that year I was quite lucky, because I got a good job with Pirelli. I was doing a lot of development for the Formula 1 and GP2 tires. I was still testing a lot, but still had in my mind, look, guys, I'm young, I'm still fit, I'm still sharp. I'm sure I can show myself somewhere that I'm able to do a good job. So we were looking around to see several options in the end of 2015, and we looked at DTM, we looked at the World Endurance Championship and the European Le Mans Series. And then I got a very good offer from Jota, and I decided to race with Harry Tingnell and Simon Dolan, two English drivers, to do European Le Mans Series. And in the end, it was a very good decision. We won the championship in 2016. I think it was a bit of a game changer for me, because suddenly, you come from a Formula One car, you jump in a car that's a little bit slower, but it was a very good fun car to drive. But you had suddenly teammates that you had to work with. Normally, you always had teammates that you were against, you had to beat them. So the first few tests, I had to adapt myself, because, always you wanted to be the fastest and the quickest and the most time on track and the most time to drive on and to do the testing. But the first day of testing, we were with three drivers, and I jumped in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because they did the morning.
Yeah,
I was like, "What the fuck is this? why I cannot drive? I need to drive. Come on, I never drove in this car.
I've come from Formula One. So, do you not know who I am?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was a little game changer. But I have to be honest that Harry Tingnell is a good friend now. Super lovely guy. I really like him. And he helped me a lot to understand the whole world of endurance racing. And I dialed in quite well. We won the first race straight away in Silverstone. And then on the end of the year, we won the championship. And that was a good year and a nice comeback, to be honest, in racing.
Yeah. Mm. The World Endurance Championship has certainly proven to be quite a really good championship, especially to allow drivers to showcase, their skill and really helps their career sometimes after it's mixed results in Formula One. But you were racing an LMP2 car, that's right, isn't it? What are the main differences between that and a Formula One car?
That year was quite big. Now I'm racing the new LMP2 cars. Mm. And to be honest, they are really fast. I think they're 1 to 2 seconds slower than F2. In Silverstone, we were in qualifying only 1 second off compared to the qualifying in Formula 2. It is a very quick car. It's a very nice car to drive. I mean, that what I mean is it's like the downforce level and the power level. And of course you have to do it with teammates, and that's what I like. I mean, we have a great team now, a Dutch guy who owns a lot of supermarkets, Frits van Eert. He owns Jumbo supermarkets in Holland. I started to work with him in 2008, and he's also sponsoring Max Verstappen, and he's doing a lot of sport sponsoring as well in Holland. And a lovely guy, and he's really passionate about racing. And I try to help him as much as possible because he's 52 years old, and he's our, let's say, gentleman driver in our category. So I'm not only racing myself, but I'm also coaching him, trying to understand that he's getting faster, quicker, managing the traffic, managing the car, because it is a quick car. And we're having a lot of good fun and good times. And I think this year or this season, we did so far very, very well. We won a race. And we finished one time third in Silverstone. And we're having a lot of fun, and I love to race with him, to be honest.
Now, I'm keen to get your thoughts on Formula One. We've just had the return of racing, thank God, in Austria over the weekend. You commentate yourself on the Formula One. What's your take on modern Formula One? Presumably you watch a lot of it. What do you think about it these days?
It's those cars are really fast. I mean, I was racing in 2013, and those cars, especially the cars where I drove in, was quite bad sometimes, quite difficult to drive. But nowadays, you see the cars are on rails. You don't see them moving, especially the Mercedes. They did a really good job. It of course, to be honest, the last few years, it's been a little bit boring because there was only one team dominating. Winning races, winning championship. They did the best they could. But I think this year is going to be a more interesting year, especially because the teams are much more closer. The rules are still the same. And I think it's going to be a nice year, let's say.
Now, obviously, you're a big supporter of Max Verstappen. Who is your, is it Max is your one to watch, or is there another superstar that you think is worth keeping an eye on this season?
Well, for me, Lewis Hamilton. He's the one. I've been racing with him all my life until I was 30. We started in go-kart. We met each other when we were 13. And from there on, I saw already straight away he was super talented, super focused. He had a good background with McLaren people there, and he made the most out of it. And the funny thing was, in the lower series in cars, like Formula Renault, Formula 3, he was okay. But the faster the car start to become, nowadays also in Formula 1, the quicker he is. And that's very nice to see. I mean, I think he's one of the biggest competitors I ever raced with, and for me, he's one of the best drivers in the world we ever had. And of course, I never raced with Max Verstappen, but I know him very well. I know Jos very well because Jos was tuning my go kart engines when I won the world championship in go kart in 2002. I spent a lot of time with the family. I spent a lot of time with Max. He was only that year 3 or 4 years old, and I know them very, very well. And I know Max how good he is, and I think he has the same level as Lewis. But unfortunately, the cars are not close enough yet this season. Mm. So I like to see them more closer and to see them battling, because I think that will be amazing for everybody on to see the race with them battling in front of you.
When we have the rule changes finally come in and the cars are going to look very, very different, do you think that's going to have a big impact on the racing? Are we going to see a little bit closer? A car's going to be able to get closer to the car in front?
I hope so. You know, they made some changes already a couple of years ago. I think it helps, but it was not enough. But I think the new rules, it will be very good for Formula One, because we need more excitement, we need more overtaking. Although, don't forget that yesterday's race was already, last weekend race was already quite interesting. And it was a lot of things were going on. So I think the whole field is already more close than ever. Mm-hmm. I think that's already good for Formula One, but for sure, I'm looking to the new rules.
I think we should just race in Austria every weekend. And thank God we're going there again this week. The only thing I was thinking was, and I was listening to Jenny Gow, who incidentally was on this show a few weeks ago, but she was talking on 5 Live about next the race coming this weekend in Austria again, and having to go through FP1, FP2 on the Friday. What's the point? Is there a point? Do you think they'll change it up a little bit, or will it just continue as a normal race weekend?
No, I think they will continue as a normal race weekend, because you know, you never know what's happening. Maybe the weather changing, maybe start to rain. I'm sure that some teams will come up with some updates. They were not sitting still for the last few weeks in the factory. They will bring new updates, new parts. They have to test it again on FP1, FP2. And take it from there. But I think it's going to be hopefully again an excited race, because I really enjoyed the race last weekend, and I think it's going to be again a nice race, because when you see the midfield, it's very close. Mm. But still, guys, the Mercedes needs to go a little bit slower.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Do you think are we going to see another podium full of Mercedes cars? Do you think, Lewis wasn't in the end, but what's your top three? Who do you expect to take the podium in this coming race?
I think Lewis is a little bit angry, a little bit pissed off. So I think he's going to win that race. I know him quite well. And you know, after the weekend, like last weekend, he's a bit pissed off and it's like, fuck, okay, now I'm going to hammer it down and show you who I am. And, hopefully Red Bull is doing well, so I expect that Max is also angry, especially after what happened last weekend with no points. So he's going to be second, and then the way I put on third, maybe Bottas, because he's still in a nice flow from last weekend.
Yeah, we'll hold you to that.
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah, we'll be sharing those.
Okay, good.
Guido, do you have an idol? Have you had an idol, racing or otherwise, a hero that someone you've looked up to over the years?
When I was younger, it was Ayrton Senna, Michael Schumacher. Mm. And those were, of course, the guys that you looked up to. I was lucky to meet Michael and spend a bit of time with him. Very lovely guy. Unfortunately, I have never met Ayrton Senna. I really would have wished to meet him. But he was a big inspiration for my career, but for a lot of people. You know, I think he was a very special guy with special talent. And also his story, what he did, the way he did things in his career, but also next to the racing. He was a good guy, let's say.
Hmm. Now, listen, it's time to change things up a little bit here, Guido. This is the important part of the interview. We are going to introduce you to our very famous quiz. I will pass you to my illustrious co-host to introduce you to Motor Mouths.
Yes, cue music. Guido van der Garde, welcome to Motor Mouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport. Now, I have got four questions for you, plus a bonus question. There are 13 points up for grabs. We love an odd number. At the moment, in first place is Martin Plowman. Second place is Brendan Hartley. And third place is Ollie Webb. They are currently filling out the top three at the moment. Okay. Bottom of the list is Karun Shantok.
Still.
3.5 points. Ugh. So you've got him to beat.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you these questions, and basically, hopefully, they're all to do with you roughly in your career, so that should help.
Okay.
Let's roll on with question number one. Guido, during your year racing for Caterham in 2013, what was the highest race position you achieved?
It was P13 in Budapest.
Was it P13?
He said it so confidently.
P14. I don't remember.
You know what? I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you how many? I'll give you 2.5 for that one.
Yeah.
Because it was in Budapest in Hungary, so you got that as well. 2.5 points out of 3. Okay. Question 2. Caterham were initially called Team Lotus and debuted in 2010, but who were their main two drivers?
It was Jarno Trulli and it was Heikki Kovalainen.
Oh, yes. Round of applause.
Points. Full points on that one. Okay, question 3. In what year did Racing Team Netherlands, your current team in the World Endurance Championship, in what year did they first compete in the 24 Hours of Le Mans?
It was the year before I raced with them, so it was 2017.
Oh, yes. He's on fire. He's looking good.
He's on it. Okay, right. We're going to play you a little clip now and have a listen, and I want you to answer who's talking in this clip. And what are you talking about?
Here it comes.
Have a listen.
Oh, I don't know. My it's what does that mean? Okay, it's not so bad.
No, not
bad. Phew.
Any ideas? Who's talking there? You're in that clip. You're talking to somebody. There's a bit of bleeping out there. What's going on, do you think?
I don't know. I think something swearing, but I think those are the guys from Sky.
Yes. Correct. Who's the guy that does the notebook?
Yeah, exactly. Ted Kravitz.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes.
Yeah, so you chatted to Ted about Dutch swear words, basically.
Exactly, I remember, yeah.
Okay, I'll give you the full points. I'm feeling quite generous today. Okay, bonus question for you. Mm-hmm. What position did you finish the 2013 Formula One World Championship in?
Last.
No, you're wrong.
No, really?
You weren't. You were 22nd out of 23. You beat Max Chilton.
Oh, Chilton.
Really?
Oh,
yeah, you beat Chilton. Okay. So not the bottom.
That's a good one. Okay,
not the bottom. Okay, right. Let me do the maths.
Oh, poor old Max in the Marussia.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, Guido, it doesn't matter that you were second to last in F1 because let me just do the maths again. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
It feels good.
You have shot up the leaderboard and you have taken third place. So Guido van der Gaard, you are third in the hardest quiz in motorsport. And we've had some big names on there. We've had Ido Mortara, Will Buxton, Buemi. David Coulthard could only manage 14th. So you've done very well there.
Thank you, Guido, for
playing Motormouth.
Well done. Good result. New person on the podium. That's what we like to see. Now, listen, Guido, if you had access to a time machine, where would you go back to in your career? Would you change anything? Or is there any advice that you would have given your younger self to change what might happen in the future?
Well, I'm not going back because, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Life goes how it goes. The most important thing to give advice to the young people is to follow your heart, to follow your goal, to have a goal, and to go for it. And when you are... pushing hard for it and you find good people around you and you believe in yourself because that's the most important thing and you have the results, you will reach the goal.
Yep.
And I'm sure of that. And, you know, don't look back, always look forward. Has no sense to look back and go from there.
Are you still working with some young drivers? I know you've done some in the past. You've looked after a few guys. Are you still doing that?
Yeah. I'm coaching now, or managing actually, a young guy in go-karts. His name is Thomas ten Brinke. Last year, he won the world championship in junior. So he's a good guy, very quick. So hopefully he will start racing a car soon. I think next year, we're looking at it at the moment. And I think he has the potential to do very well. And I hope to reach a high level with him. But we take it from each year, you know.
Yeah.
We
we look at it, results, how things are going, what are the structure, what to do next to racing, how you build them up to start racing, and it will be good fun to work with him.
Yeah, that must be very satisfying, passing on your knowledge to a young driver and watching him come up through the ranks. But you're not exactly old yourself. You're 35, right? So you've still got racing left in you. Is there anything outside of WEC or Formula One? Is there anything else that you'd like to race in? Have you earmarked something in future years that you'd like to do?
No. I mean, the LMP2, I really enjoy that. It's a good car, good racing, and I really enjoy to work with Frits van Eert, the driver I race with. And the only thing maybe I would like to do that's still on top of my list is to do the Daytona 24 Hours. Mm-hmm. Of course, the 24 Hours Le Mans, that was nice. We're going to do it again this year. But one thing that I really would love to do is the 24 Hours Daytona. So hopefully I have the chance to do it already next year. But let's see. I mean, still enjoying racing. I'm still quick, to be honest. So that's good, and I have the experience in the whole series, and that means a lot. And to be honest, I really like working with Fritz. It's good fun.
No interest in hopping across to a bit of Formula E action.
No. It's not really my thing. Of course, the way they build it up, because I know the owners from the whole series quite well. Big respect to the guys. Big respect that they build up so fast. They have all the big manufacturers there. So I love to see the races. I tested myself the cars, and I don't really like it.
No,
not my thing.
Well, fair enough. What's your road car though? What do you drive on the daily?
I have a Porsche Macan.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a GTS, but I live in Amsterdam, so I'm not using it a lot.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, with the family, I have a young boy from nearly 2 years old. Quite handy to have a decent big car. So if we go out, that we can take a little stuff with us. And but when you live in a city like Amsterdam, everything you do with a bike.
Yeah.
You cycle around, and that's good enough.
Who's your best pal in racing?
Best pal? In my racing days, when I was doing Formula One, it was Nico Hülkenberg. I'm still in touch with him quite a bit. It's a nice guy. I mean, I grew up with him. He was also a bit younger than me, but we were racing in the same go-kart team. And then we were in Formula One for 3 years together. Good guy, good fun, relaxed, super talented, mega fast. And nowadays, I think I'm getting along very well with Max, because I know him from when he was a very young boy, a child actually. And you know, you come along with I get along with a lot of people and a lot of drivers. I'm an easygoing guy, so that's good.
Just on Max, I'm curious. When you first saw him racing those years ago, could you see that there was something special in him even at that young, early age?
Yeah, straight away. I mean, even the first few years in go-kart, of course, it's tough to see. But once you go out and race in Italy, race the World Championship, European Championship, I was still in touch with Jos quite a bit. And you could hear already all around the paddock of go-karts, like, oh, fuck, this guy is the one. Watch him, he will do well.
Yeah.
And he won European Championship, World Championship, and then he moved to cars. And straight away, the first few tests, first few races, it was super impressive. So, yeah, hopefully he will win the championship in Formula One soon.
Yeah.
The good thing in Holland, the racing is huge and big at the moment. A lot of people watching Formula One. It's a big happening here, so that's also good for me.
Yeah, and there are some good Dutch teams. I mean, it's Van Amersfoort, isn't it? Who are one of the big teams in Holland. Do you think there'll ever be someone like them that makes the step up and has a team in F1?
It's tough. It's tough to become a Formula One team. I think it's very hard. But of course, we also have MP Motorsport from Holland. Yep. They're doing F3 and F2 at the moment. I think they had a good race last weekend. They won with F2. They finished second with F3. So I think it's a very competitive team. But to reach Formula One, you need to have a lot of budget, a lot of money behind, a big sponsor behind. At the moment, I don't see it yet, but you never know.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you have any hidden talents?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Intriguing.
Oh, yeah. Go on then.
My hobby was also playing, like I like to play music, so DJing, and I get on quite well with the DJ decks. I started in 2010-11. I got some lessons and I started to get better and better. And it was good fun because, you know, we were racing, was a test driver of Formula One, and there were always some after parties. So the guys said, hey, can you do some DJing? Yeah, I don't know. It's not. I'm not super good. Yeah, do it. So I started playing some after parties there. And yeah, it was good fun. And I have to say, I'm quite good at it. I have a good friend of mine. He's Ryan Machano, like a top DJ in Holland. Mm. He's playing. He's like a duet with Sunnery James, and I play sometimes with him, and it's good fun. I enjoy that. It's music makes you relax, makes you happy, and that's also important in life.
That's very cool. That officially makes you the coolest racing driver we've had on the show.
Yeah, everybody else is just like, nah, not really.
Nah, cook a bit.
Just like racing. It's boring. But that was great. All right, then. Flip it on its head. What are you terrible at?
Oof. Paperwork? Paperwork, yeah. Of course, I'm running a business in Holland, a real estate company. I started this 2 years ago, and it's getting bigger and bigger. We do a lot of development in Amsterdam, and we're making very nice, cool properties, very high-end. But I don't like to do the paperwork. I'm good and getting all the business together and making the most out of it, but paperwork's not my thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm certainly with you. We have a final three questions, which we ask all of our guests. Harry, you want to kick off with number one?
Yeah, go on then. Guido, what's got you excited at the moment?
That Formula One started again. That's very excited for my life, but also the people in Holland here. It's super cool. We've been waiting for it for a while now. And of course, my own racing starts again as well. We've been doing some testing last week in Barcelona. We have the first race in August. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
Nice.
If you were not a racing driver, had this career never happened, what would you be doing?
DJ.
Ah, he gave you traveling. It'd be Tiesto. One of those.
No, not Tiesto. No. I was a big fan of him. I still am, actually. But I met him a couple of times. Super, super nice guy. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like to play, but to be honest, I think
you can't do a Jaime Alguersuari and go off and become a DJ full time.
No. I mean, you know, I think he's doing well actually. But it's. I think I would have been a businessman. My father and mother, they had a big company in Holland. They sold baby articles like trolleys, rooms, stuff like that. And I think when I didn't have the racing, I would have been doing that to build up the business, company business from the family. But I'm happy I did my racing, let's say.
Yeah. All right then. Well, final question for you, Guido. What are you scared of?
Not much. My wife is always saying that I'm never scared. I've never been scared for not a lot of things in my life. I think maybe it's a bit of racing driver or like an athlete, you know, they're never scared. I think once you get scared, you should have stopped racing. Of course, you look at a different perspective when you get a child. I mean, last year or nearly 2 years ago, I got our son, Jax. You look at life a little bit different, but I'm not scared.
Would you be happy if your son went down the racing route?
Yeah, I would like to do that with him. I mean, you know, if I look at the story, Jos and Max Verstappen, it's a super cool story. you know, the way they did it together and to get him in Formula One at a very young age, I think that's unbelievable. But yeah, if my son would love to race, I will not push him. But if he would love it, yeah, why not? But nowadays, the only thing what he likes is a ball. He likes to play football every day. He's the first word he was saying, not mommy, daddy, but ball. So maybe he's becoming a football player. Who knows?
Excellent.
Oh, well, brilliant. Well, hopefully we'll have a mini Van der Gaard in the sporting world soon. Guido, thank you so much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast. It's been amazing to chat to you about your career and get your thoughts on Formula One. Looking forward to going racing again this weekend, of course, for the World Endurance Championship to get back going as well for you. But Guido, thank you very much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast.
Yes, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.